Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and on today's show, I'll be talking with Major General Mark Graham about his efforts to help Army soldiers and veterans deal with post-traumatic stress disorder and mental illness. That mission is a personal one for the Major General because his son Kevin committed suicide, and he wants to spare other families the pain of losing a child in that manner. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Major General Mark Graham. For several years now, Major General Graham and his wife Carol have waged a different kind of military campaign. Though their son Jeff was hailed as a hero after being killed while serving in Iraq, their son Kevin's death by suicide was met with silence from the Army. Since then, the Grahams have worked to change the Army's treatment of soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder and to erase the stigma that surrounds those with mental illness. Their story and their work was recently the subject of Yoki Driesen's book, The Invisible Front, Love and Loss in an Era of Endless War. That book won a Christopher Award, and I met Major General Graham and Carol at the ceremony. I wanted to learn more about his efforts, so I'm happy to have him on the show today. Please welcome Major General Mark Graham. Major General Graham, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Tony.
Now, I mentioned in my intro that your son, Jeff, was killed by an IED in Iraq and that Kevin suffered from depression and committed suicide. But take me back to happier times. When the kids were growing up, you also have a daughter named Melanie. Did they have a typical upbringing? Were they just typical kids growing up?
Well, they had a typical military kids upbringing.
Okay.
We moved around a lot and meet new friends, and they had that upbringing, which was a different, unique experience than those who don't move around a lot.
Sure.
We think it was a good upbringing. I mean, you know, they seemed like good, you know, they were great kids, seemed like they were, you know, doing well. And
Yeah. Well, before Kevin's suicide, what was your exposure to the problems of mental illness and depression?
You know, we really didn't know about it. And, of course, it's, you know, almost 12 years now on the 21st of June when Kevin died in 2003. Mm. So I think their progress has been made. But back when Kevin died, you know, we didn't know a lot about, you know, mental health. You know, we just didn't know about it. Families didn't talk about it much, you know, so you didn't know much about family history. Or it was kind of the stigma was so thick, I think, that no one talked about it. And I knew our son was sad, but I didn't know you could die from being too sad.
Right. Well, I think the topic of mental illness, it seems to come to the fore when a celebrity is involved. Like, you know, when Robin Williams committed suicide, that really brought mental illness to the forefront. But then after a while, it kind of settles down a bit. Have you seen any change in the attitude toward mental illness and in people willing to reach out in the last few years?
I have, and I think we're moving forward. I wish we could move forward faster, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to slowly whittle away the stigma. And I oftentimes refer to breast cancer and look at the difference that eliminating the stigma about breast cancer has done. Is, you know, people go in and they get checked early. There's funding for awareness programs. So people are less you know, I guess they're more likely, if you will, to go in and get care early and get checked early. So for mental illness, it's the same thing. We've got to get rid of the stigma so that people won't feel like it's some kind of character flaw or a weakness that they're having some struggles.
Right. Was it that stigma that kept Kevin quiet, that kept him from reaching out and getting more help?
I think so. I think my wife and I both say this. When we speak, I mean, we think we were part of the stigma. I don't think we realize it even, but I think we were part of the stigma. And that's why I do speak out about stigma, because we were there. That was us. And we encourage others, please don't be like us. Don't be the stigma. You know, Kevin was struggling. We knew he was struggling. And, we didn't do all we could have done for him. We didn't get him to the best care he could have had. I mean, he was getting care, but not the best care he could have had. And we just didn't understand enough about it. So we just don't want this to happen to anyone else. And Kevin, I think, frankly, Kevin was ashamed. And he didn't want anyone to know about it. His brother and sister didn't even know that he was on medication.
Okay. And now he was in college at the time this happened, or he was just finishing up college, right? And usually we think of youth as kind of a carefree time. But is depression and mental illness, is that something that's affecting young people, do you think, more than we're aware of?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, Kevin had just finished his third year of college. He was getting ready to start his senior year. And I think, as you know, that, of course, there's a lot of some studies now about brain development and the stressors and things going on. But I, one of the things we weren't aware of is, and it depends on where you read it, but suicide has been like number two or number three cause of death in college age students.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's sad. I mean, and we didn't know that. So that's one of the things we did after Kevin died, as we started a program at the University of Kentucky on awareness, suicide prevention and awareness. That a wonderful lady, Dr. Mary Chandler Bowling, leads at the Counseling Center at UK, and they talk to parents during orientation. They talk to parents about depression. You know, if you see these symptoms in if you see these warning signs in your kids, you need to do something. Don't wait. This is serious, and don't wait. And the same thing to the students coming in. They tell them, look, this is real. This is not something that's a character flaw or something else. This is a real thing. Just like if your liver, your stomach, your heart, your chest, something was wrong, you would tell someone. You got to tell someone.
Right. Well, what are some of the symptoms that she tells people to look out for?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing is that, if you're feeling sad and everyone gets sad, but if you're feeling sad a lot and it's more than sad, if you're starting to feel lonely, and lonely is a big one, especially if you're still around people, but yet you're feeling lonely, you feel like, you really don't have any friends anymore. You don't fit in.
Yeah.
Those are clear signs of depression. You can't sleep. You start drinking more. Those are some of the key ones. There are some great websites, of course, out there that have all the great, the warning signs in detail and much better than I can articulate. But there are warning signs on, and college campuses, I think, are starting to get better at that. But
right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Major General Mark Graham. He's the subject of Yoki Driessen's Christopher Award-winning book, The Invisible Front, Love and Loss in an Era of Endless War. Now, in this book, The Invisible Front, Yoki writes about the fact that when Jeff was killed in Iraq, he was hailed as a hero, but Kevin's death was largely met with silence. How did you and your wife, Carol, navigate through that troubled time in which you were forced to deal with, over a relatively short period of time, the deaths of two sons?
Yeah, we lost Kevin in June of 2003 and Jeffrey in February of 2004, so 8 months in between their deaths. And, when Kevin died, we felt like the worst parents in the world, that we'd so let him down. And we still, of course, still have some of those, thoughts and feelings that we let him down, that we, weren't there for him, and we didn't get him the help he needed. And then Jeffrey's killed in Iraq helping, save his platoon, and he's, a hero. And we're the same parents. We didn't do anything. Jeff did that. We didn't. I mean, so, we're the same parents that raised our kids. And on one hand, it was the stigma was the shame and everything of a suicide. On the other hand, it's a hero, and everyone's talking to you about it. But I think a lot of us people didn't know what to say when we lost Kevin. I mean, they didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And not saying anything is worse than, that's hard. I mean, at least acknowledge the loss of a loved one that died by suicide. I mean, Kevin was struggling. I mean, I often say our sons died fighting different battles.
Yeah, yeah. So when people who are believers in God face those kind of events, they can either lean on their faith for strength or have their faith in God shaken. What was it for you and Carol?
Well, our faith was shaken. I mean, it shook our faith and rattled our moral courage. I mean, we were struggling really hard, and we just didn't understand. We'd been praying and praying for Kevin, and we just, didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But friends, military friends, family, and others have been around there, and our faith got us through that. I mean, I believe there's a plan. I just didn't get a vote in the plan.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the book, Yoki shares instances. I mean, it sounds like you got, by and large, a lot of support from people of faith, but there was
We did, absolutely.
there was a few who didn't see it that way, who were more saying, you know, thinking of suicide as an unpardonable sin. How did you deal with that? And I'm glad to say, because I cringed when I read that part of the book. And, you know, I'm glad to say I think most Christians and churches have a much more enlightened view of suicide now, as it really is an illness that people need compassion, not condemnation for. How did you handle the difficult parts of that?
Well, that was very difficult, as you say, and because it was the stigma. We didn't know what to do either. I mean, so it wasn't just others. It was Carol and I, too. We didn't know what to do. I mean, we even said, you know, so what do we do? I mean, so we all talked about it. We just didn't know. We talked about it, and of course, we were in shock. I mean, Carol and I were and Melanie, we were all just in shock, and sure, much of our family was. So we didn't know go about it. But I frankly think it was the stigma that is the reason for that. If the stigma is eliminated and people realize it, you know, it's like I think people say when you have something wrong with you, you know, it's an illness. Oh, you know, you died from cancer. You died from this. You died from that. Well, you know, you can die from depression too. It's called suicide.
Yeah.
And you know, you take your own life, and it's, you know, you've got an illness. Something's wrong there. I mean, Kevin clearly even said one time on the phone, he goes, you know, my brain doesn't work anymore. And Kevin was a straight A student. He was a smart kid. Mm. And for him to make a comment like that, I mean, it was like, what? I mean, so, you know, you don't think, oh, this is something, you know, he could die from. I mean, you just, 12 years ago, we just didn't know enough. We didn't think that. I mean, it didn't really, we never even really connected that.
I'm Tony Ross. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Major General Mark Graham. He's featured in the book The Invisible Front, Love and Loss in an Era of Endless War. He's working now to eliminate the stigma of mental illness, hoping that people ask for help. His son Kevin committed suicide back in 2003. Now, we're talking about mental illness, but you're also someone who spent his life in the Army, and you're also trying to help vets with post-traumatic stress. What was your experience of post-traumatic stress with the soldiers under you through the years? Were you aware of how big a problem it was?
No, I mean, I was not. Actually, the first time I really heard anything about post-traumatic stress was when our son Kevin died.
Okay.
And the doctor that saw Melanie said he's concerned about her post-traumatic stress.
Okay, wow.
And that was in 2003. And, of course, the war had just started then. So you really hadn't started hearing much about post-traumatic stress at that time. Kind of like IEDs. You really hadn't heard about IEDs until then.
Right.
So that's when post-traumatic stress, right around the same time, is when you started hearing more about post-traumatic stress, because that's when we had our first units coming back. And we learned more and more about it, that it's real. And one of the things I tell people is, you know, and I always say soldiers because I was in the Army, but it's all service members, that is, you know, they're not making this up. This is real. They're struggling. You know, they've deployed. They've been away from their family. I mean, they're struggling, and they're not making this up. Post-traumatic stress is something real. And what we learned early on was, is the earlier you can get in for care, the better. So we were encouraging people. One is eliminate the stigma surrounding mental illness and depression, so that they can get in. If they're struggling from some post-traumatic stress, get into care as soon as possible, because there is help, and you can get help and work your way through all this.
Right, right. Is it policy when a soldier does come back from a war zone to talk to a psychologist or someone who could kind of put a finger on that before it gets too bad?
You know, I don't know what the current policy is, because I've been out of the Army for a few years now, almost a few years now. I know when you come back, you're screened, and you're given a survey, and you're screened and ask a series of questions, and there's follow-up screenings to do that. I think based on that screening is whether you actually see a psychologist or a medical professional. But I'm not sure if that policy has changed since then.
Right, right. Well, one of the things Yoki Driesen writes about in The Invisible Front is, you know, you started expressing concern for soldiers with PTSD and taking action to help them before they go down that road of hurting themselves. What was the reaction among your peers when you started that effort?
Well, not everyone was in agreement with me.
Okay.
I will say, and subordinates as well, because I think sometimes when you're saying this was going against the norm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just could, you know, I could feel it, I could see it, and frankly, after I lost my son Kevin, I knew there was more to the mental illness piece than realized, and I could just, you know, you could see it in service members' eyes when you talk to them. They just, I mean, I had a senior, you know, an NCO tell me one time when I saw him in a medical facility, and I said, you know, how are you doing? Which was not a real, you know, he was obviously not doing well. He wouldn't have been there. And I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm not doing very well, sir. He goes, I don't understand what's going on. He goes, I'm angry. I can't sleep. I get mad. I yell at my family. He goes, I didn't used to do that before. He goes, something's wrong. And right. And he was struggling with some post-traumatic stress. And frankly, he got care, and he was doing very well after that. He got the care he needed and deserved, and it was available for him. And he ended up doing well. So, other people just didn't agree with me. All the time. There were some that did, and then there were some that did not. And some voiced it and told me so. And, you know, and I appreciated that. I mean, everyone has their opinions and thoughts, and I thanked her for that. But then I said, you know, look, we need to get behavioral health care to the lowest level possible before folks leave, and then when they get back.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, we need to get it in the units, and the military is, in fact, doing that. I think now they're getting mental health care down in the units and with those units, which is key.
Right. Well, I guess most trailblazers do experience some kind of a resistance when they try to change things for the better, and I guess that's what happened with you. But at least you think things are moving in the right direction, right?
I think in many cases there are. I think there's other things we can, you know, certainly continue to do, and you always want to see things, you know, move faster. But sometimes change is hard, and
yeah.
Sometimes simple changes are very hard, and this is a cultural change. And to change a culture is so hard, but this is a life and death change, not only in the military but in the civilian community as well regarding mental health.
Right. Now, if a soldier does come back and express some, you know, hint of psychological issues, would that, because the thing that's keeping them from admitting that is that they think it would hurt their career. Has that changed, or does that still need to change?
I'm not positive. I know it's I think more sensitive to that than they were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it goes back to the stigma. So if the service member is struggling, you know, are they willing to come forward and say they're struggling and get the care they need and fear that they, you know, something might happen to them. So I think that's the stigma that we continue to battle. And even if people say come forward and get help, you know, they're still concerned sometimes of whether it'll affect them. That's going to take time as well, for them to feel that they can comfortably come forward. And like many things else, and I used to tell service members this as well, is, you know, if you have a medical condition that's so severe that you can, you know, there are medical conditions that are severe and you can't stay in the military. I mean, some military medical conditions you're not. So you might have, you know, you might have severe depression or mental illness. You might have something wrong with you that's severe enough to where you may in fact not be able to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just because of that. There's other illnesses and things that you can't have and stay in the military either.
Right. It's just any kind of illness. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just depends on the severity of it. I mean, in some illnesses you can, and there's medications or treatments and whatever, and you can still stay, but it just depends. And that's why I used to always tell commanders and leaders, you know, get your service members to our medical professionals and let the medical professionals do what they do best, and that's take care of our service members.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Major General Mark Graham. He's featured in the book The Invisible Front by Yoki Driesen. It's a Christopher Award-winning book about love and loss in an era of endless war. We're talking about dealing with mental illness and PTSD. And you mentioned before that when your daughter Melanie saw a psychologist, he thought she might have PTSD. How did you all deal with the stress after the suicide and the death? I mean, did you go through some of these healing techniques yourselves?
Well, Melanie didn't think she had, Melanie wasn't concerned about PTSD. She'd never heard of it either, but the doctor did.
Yeah.
He told my wife and I were concerned about Melanie and her post-traumatic stress from this. And when we asked him about it, my wife, Carol, did.
Mm-hmm.
I did not initially, but I was later on, I was really having a hard time sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was just struggling sleeping. So finally I went in and saw the doctor and I said, look, you know, I'm in a position where I need to be able to sleep.
Yeah.
And he was able to give me something to help me sleep, and I was able to take that and get some sleep finally. And then I was, doing okay after that, but I did need some help to do that. And that was really hard to do. I mean, I have to admit that was hard to do. I mean, you know, and you're a senior leader, everybody knows your vehicle,
you know, when you walk in the waiting room and you wait, you know, you're, mm-hmm. everybody knows who you are. And
so just admitting that you needed help was a big step.
Right, it was, and I did. I did. You know, you can't function without sleep, and I knew. And my wife, she told me, she goes, you know, you need to go see someone to get some sleep. You know, you got to be able to sleep. And she's right. I need to be able to sleep to make good decisions.
Right, right. Now, I know Melanie got into nursing. I'm just curious, was that an early dream of hers, or did that come about because she had seen so much, you know, heartache that she wanted to be a healer?
No, you know, it was an early dream of hers.
Okay.
Our son, Jeff, was an engineer mm-hmm. and graduated with an engineering degree from the University of Kentucky. And our son, Kevin, had wanted to be a doctor, and Melanie had wanted to be a nurse.
Okay.
And she's done wonderfully in nursing. But it took her a while because you've read the book. So she struggled getting through school because she was, you know, grieving the loss of her brothers and mm-hmm. Struggling. So, but she, and I even think at some point, and I think my wife Carol says it sometimes, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. I think, you know, sometimes you experience post-traumatic growth.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah.
So I think Melanie, you'd have to talk to Melanie, but I mean, I'm sure she still struggles like we do. You know, we all do when you lose someone,
sure.
No matter how you lose someone, you grieve them.
Yeah,
grieve their loss, but she's done well, and she continued on to get her nursing degree and finished her bachelor's degree in nursing, and has done very well and loves what she does. She loves being a nurse.
That's great. That's great. Now, you also you're trying to make a difference for people, like we've been talking about today. What are you working on right now to kind of change the world for the better for people with depression, for vets with PTSD?
Well, thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. I currently work at Rutgers University Behavior Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of Rutgers University, and I was fortunate enough to be given the opportunity to run a call center and with several programs. And one of our programs is a program called Vet to Vet Talk.
Okay.
And it's veterans can call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and talk to a veteran. So when the phone rings, a veteran answers the phone,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about, you know, what's going on, what are you going through, and the caller can talk as long or as little as they want. They can give us little information as they want. It's confidential.
Mm-hmm.
It can be anonymous if they choose, and we're here to help support them through peer support. You know, we have a peer support model that's been proven and been around, you know, over 10, you know, 15 years now, I guess, and we use that same model of peer support, and we're not an information referral service. We do peer support, but we do also help when they're struggling or if they're going through something else. There's so many stressors going on, and we often say sometimes people are struggling like they feel like they have a fire hydrant of issues and stressors coming at them.
Yeah.
And what the peers do so well is they help try to break that down into garden hoses. I mean, you know,
okay.
How do we take these on smaller pieces one at a time?
Mm-hmm.
And so we might give them, we might refer them to somewhere else or help them connect to another support or service, but then yet they still want to talk to a peer. So we do more outgoing calls than we do incoming. So people call us, and once they do, if they do want peer support, then we set up a time when it's good for them, and then the peer calls them back.
Right.
And, of course, the peer's a veteran. So it's, you know, you served, I served, let's talk.
And Major General Graham just mentioned before that service, Vet to Vet Talk. I want to give the number. It's 1-855-838-7481. Again, that's 1-855-838-7481. Not to, you know, downplay all the complexities of the thing, but is sometimes just knowing that there's somebody out there who cares, is that just a huge step for somebody who's experiencing mental illness, depression, to know that somebody else cares about them?
It is. It is, and it's someone that cares that served.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and we're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We never close. You know, we're open holidays. We're always open. And they know. And even after, you know, we might talk to somebody 4 to 16 different times over a 5 or 6 month period.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say, hey, this is, you know, thanks for your help. I appreciate it. I'm doing better now. Because our goal is for them to thrive.
Yeah.
You know, to get the care they need, to get help. So, you know, we work with them to get them into care, whatever they need. And then when they tell us, hey, you know, this has been good, thanks, I appreciate your help, however long that might be, and then we tell them, don't forget, you know, you're never alone. You can always call 24/7. There's a veteran here who'll answer the phone.
Wow, that's great. Now, you know that the Christophers reflect this ideal of lighting a candle instead of cursing the darkness. Where are the candles in this experience? I mean, you're lighting candles through what you're doing, but overall, how do you see, what do you think needs to be done in this whole situation for the candles, for the light to beat the darkness?
Well, that's a great question. I think people need to be aware that there's so many people out there that want to help others.
Right.
That veterans are out there struggling. Others are struggling as well. But there's others that want to help. And we just need to make sure that people know, don't give up. You know, don't give up. Call, talk to someone, but seek help, because there's so many out there that want to help you. But you got to get beyond this. You got to get beyond. It's almost as if you have to get beyond the stigma of your own mm-hmm. sometimes to seek that help. And every door that a person goes through needs to be the right door.
Right, right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking with Major General Mark Graham. He's the topic of the book, The Invisible Front, Love and Loss in an Era of Endless War. We gave the book a Christopher Award. It's written by Yoki Driesen. And we wanted to acknowledge it because it really highlights the difficulties, the stresses, the mental illness that a lot of veterans coming back from war are dealing with when they come home. You know, Major General Graham and his wife, they lost their son Kevin to suicide, lost another son to an IED in Iraq. And they are trying to change the world for the better by telling others with mental illness that it's okay to step forward. They shouldn't be ashamed, and others shouldn't make them feel ashamed. This is like a lifeline, what Major General Graham and his wife and all the people who work with him are doing. They're giving a lifeline to people who desperately need it. So you can read more about his mission and his work and his story in the book, The Invisible Front by Yoki Driesen. And Major General, thank you again for joining me today and just for everything you are doing to, like I said, light a candle in the darkness. You're literally a lifeline for a lot of these people, and I think your halo is slowly getting a lot brighter.
Well, Tony, thank you. I'm just another guy, a dad, and a soldier. So we're all in this together, and I appreciate you and the Christophers for all you do to help light that candle and help recognize those that are trying to light candles.
Well, thank you very much. Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Every once in a while, we come face to face with someone who has borne the weight of the world on their shoulders without losing hope or crumbling under the pressure. How are some people able to cope in circumstances that would debilitate the rest of us? The short answer is that their perseverance is grounded in faith. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Persevering Through Pain and Struggle. It shares stories and reflections that will help you endure challenging times by relying on the promise of God's love. To request your free copy of Persevering Through Pain and Struggle, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.